the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is going to be talked about tonight, I can almost guarantee you. In the acceptance speech by Senator Barack Obama as he accepts the nomination of his party, the Democratic Party, for the presidency of the United States, he has made this a persistent theme in so many recent addresses, and that is the issue of universal preschool education. We're going to be talking about what that really means, and there's some very interesting research out right now indicating that perhaps the last thing you need to do is to take children those ages away from their parents. We're going to be talking about what's really represented in this idea of universal preschool, and since it's going to be very much a part of the Democratic platform, it's also a part of our conversation here today. I think just given our concerns on this program as we're trying to achieve an intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter, you cannot imagine an issue that matters more than the future of the family impacted by the idea of something like universal preschool education. And so we'll be talking about that in just a moment. First, a review of some issues in the news. Of course, right now in Denver, Colorado, all eyes are on the stadium there, formerly known as Mile High Stadium, where tonight Barack Obama is to accept the nomination of his party. It's going to be a fascinating event, and I would just encourage you as families to watch it, parents to help lead a conversation with children about what was said, what wasn't said, what was meant, what wasn't meant, beyond the pageantry, what is really represented by this candidate, and then to prepare to do the very same thing next week, looking at the acceptance speech by John McCain, as he'll be accepting the nomination of the Republican Party for the office of President of the United States. We're going to be putting material up at the website comparing the platforms of the two parties on various issues, and one of those issues will be the topic of our conversation today in terms of universal preschool education. Now, last night at the Democratic National Convention, there were addresses by former President Bill Clinton and, of course, the acceptance speech by Senator Joseph Biden as he was accepting the vice presidential nomination of his party, and then a very carefully planned and orchestrated and well carried off telegenic event with the senator from Illinois, Senator Barack Obama, who will be tonight the nominee of his party, coming in to greet and to be with the Bidens there on the platform. You know, there are other interesting parts of this, and that has to do with the big moment in history this represents. And regardless of where you stand in America today in terms of partisan affiliation, regardless of where you stand on the conservative-liberal divide, something very, very interesting and important happened yesterday, and that is one of America's two major political parties nominated an African-American to be president of the United States. There are people alive today who did not think they would see such a thing in their lifetimes. There are people today who could not have imagined just a matter of 4 or 6 or 7 or 8 years ago that such a thing could be possible in their lifetimes, much less within 4 years, because it was only 4 years ago that Senator Barack Obama gave the keynote address to the Democratic Convention as a relative unknown. And now he is receiving the nomination of his party. Now, when we look back at this election, and when we do so from an historical perspective, knowing who won, the big thing that will be remembered, at least in many minds, will be who won, because that person becomes president of the United States. But I would argue that of great historical importance, nonetheless, is the fact that whether or not Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, the fact that he was nominated for the office by one of the two major political parties in this country is a watershed in terms of this nation's historical experience. And that's something that I am going to celebrate just in terms of a reality that an African-American man was indeed nominated by one of the two major political parties for this office, even as when it comes to the issues, I'm in a very different place than Senator Barack Obama. I think all Americans ought to stand back and look at this event and say, in and of itself, this is an historic moment. And when you're helping your kids and perhaps your coworkers or fellow students and friends to figure this out, that's something that, independent of whether or not you would vote for Barack Obama, independent of a consideration of the platforms of the parties or of the convictions of the candidates, the fact that this has happened under these circumstances, given the racial history of the United States, given the legacy of slavery, of Jim Crow, of separate but equal, and all the rest, this is in itself an historic day. That doesn't mean America has solved all of its racial problems, not by a long shot. But it does mean that this nation in 2008 is a different nation than it was in 1968, and a different nation than it was in 1948 and 1928, not to mention 1858. And that's something to celebrate, even as we are reminded that there is still much work to do. At my website at albertmuller.com, I published an article this morning entitled When Conscience and Medical Practice Collide. This has to do with the confluence of two issues. First of all, last week's decision by the California Supreme Court that ruled that two doctors do not have the right to refuse to extend fertility treatments to a lesbian couple when these doctors claimed that it would violate their Christian conscience to do so. The court unanimously ruled that there was no religious liberty clause exemption from the requirement that these doctors practice no bias in terms of medical practice. Now, at the website, I posted the article because I think this is extremely important. I said it was the confluence of two issues. The first was the Supreme Court's ruling. The second was the set of proposed regulations handed down by the Bush administration at the end of last week, in which the Bush administration says that it will forbid any federal funds from going to a hospital or medical entity that does not allow doctors to have a conscience clause to opt out of procedures they would find morally abhorrent. Now, I will not talk at great length about this topic today other than to say that religious liberty is genuinely at stake in this, and that the arguments that you're hearing these days that doctors ought to be required without bias to extend any legal treatment to any patient, that's a haunting word that ought to remind us that there have been many points in human history when what was legal was inherently immoral. And I would argue that that is the case indeed with abortion. And it would be a travesty not only of medical ethics but of religious liberty if those who are pro-life as medical doctors, physicians, and medical professionals are told that they must indeed perform abortions or forfeit their medical license or professional standing. I published the article this morning at albertmuller.com. And as always, I'm glad to hear from readers. I have to tell you, I've heard from readers on an interesting score along that line because, of course, it was the California Supreme Court that sent down this decision. And I mentioned that it was, of course, influential because it was America's largest state. And I have heard from the Texans. Let me correct, as a matter of record, that Texas is the largest state in the continental United States and that California is the most populous state in the United States. We'll make that correction, and I'm reminded of the sign we've all seen, don't mess with Texas. Point well taken. There's good news on the medical front coming out having to do with stem cells. The Washington Post is reporting that scientists have transformed one type of fully developed human adult cell directly into another inside a living animal, a startling advance that could lead to cures for a variety of illnesses and sidestep the political and ethical quagmires associated with embryonic stem cell research, period. You know, time and time again, I hear people ask me, what do you believe about stem cell research? I want you to understand, I am very much for stem cell research. The discovery of these cells that are undifferentiated, that can indeed be turned on and off and directed towards the development of any kind of organ or tissue, that is to say that these are cells that can be programmed now to become skin, to become liver, to become brain, to become any number of differentiated forms of tissue. I'm for stem cell research, and anyone who really cares for the advancement of medicine and human healing should be for stem cell research. The complication is in embryonic stem cell research, which is the use of stem cells taken from human embryos. That, I believe, is inherently immoral because it requires the commodification and use and destruction of a human embryo. And anyone who holds to a consistently pro-life position, I would argue, must understand that embryonic stem cell research is inherently immoral. Now, one of the very interesting aspects of this controversy is that other forms of stem cells have turned out to be much more amenable to research than the embryonic stem cell. And now we have this good news coming out of scientists reported in the journal Nature and then reported to the media and the Washington Post that not only have other cells been used, other stem cells been used to create the kind of both experiments and potential treatments that would help people with intractable diseases such as Parkinson's, diabetes, you name it, including Alzheimer's, there now is evidence that fully developed adult cells could be tricked into acting like stem cells and render the same treatments and medical advances. That's good news any way you look at it. And I'm glad to report it on this program, and glad to make the point once again that when people say you have to destroy human embryos to look to these promising advances in medical practice, they're ignoring the obvious, now making even the front pages of the nation's newspapers. We'll be back to talk about what universal preschool is really all about and what it might mean for your family and for this society. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I want you to hear how this issue is set up by Barack Obama, Senator Obama, now the nominee of the Democratic Party to be President of the United States. He is arguing for investment in early childhood education and what is now almost commonly known as universal preschool. Not just universal access, but universal preschool. This is from a statement made by Barack Obama in the Democratic debate held in Las Vegas back in January of this year, and this is taken from MSNBC. Let's listen to the senator.
What you see consistently are children at a very early age are starting school already behind. And that's why I have said that I'm going to put billions of dollars into early childhood education that makes sure that our African-American youth, Latino youth, poor youth of every race are getting the kind of help that they need so that they know their numbers, their colors, their letters. Every dollar that we spend in early childhood education, we get $10 back in reduced dropout rates, improved reading scores. And that's the kind of commitment we have to make early on.
That was Senator Barack Obama calling for universal preschool education. The reason he said this is that there are many children who are starting school already behind. And he says that's why I'm going to put billions of dollars into early childhood education to make sure African-American youth, Latino youth, poor youth of every race are getting the kind of help they need so that they know their numbers, their colors, their letters. Every dollar, he says, we spend in early childhood education, we get $10 back in reduced dropout rates, improved reading scores. Not sure where he came up with that. Nonetheless, he says that's the kind of commitment we have to make early on. Now, just back in June, when he was making his victory speech claiming the Democratic nomination, he also spoke to the same issue, and he gave it a slightly different twist. This is what the senator had to say.
And maybe if John McCain spent some time in the schools of South Carolina, or St. Paul, Minnesota, or where he spoke tonight in New Orleans, Louisiana, he'd understand that we can't afford to leave the money behind for No Child Left Behind, that we owe it to our children to invest in early childhood education and recruit an army of new teachers and give them better pay and more support and finally decide that in this global economy, the chance to get a college education should not be a privilege for the few, but a birthright of every American. That's the change we need in America. That's why I'm running for President of the United States.
Very bold statement there by the senator, very clear in terms of his support for the idea of universal preschool, and that being held up as something of a solution to the problem of disadvantaged students being behind. The Wall Street Journal is out with an article earlier this week entitled Protect Our Kids from Preschool. It's by Shakla Dalmia and Lisa Snell, actually the end of last week. And this particular article goes at the question of universal preschool. This is what they say. Universal preschool is now second only to universal health care on the liberal policy wish list. Democratic governors across the country, including in Illinois, Arizona, Massachusetts, and Virginia, have made a major push to fund universal preschool in their states. But is strapping a backpack on all four-year-olds and sending them to preschool good for them? Not according to available evidence. Now, as you read through the study and the report that is here in the media in the Wall Street Journal, the study that I have here in hand is entitled, Is Universal Preschool Beneficial? An Assessment of RAND Corporation's Analysis and Proposals for California, that published by the Reason Foundation. You look at that, and here's the best I can distill the evidence. This is the research evidence. If you're looking at disadvantaged populations of children, preschool might actually help in terms of getting them ready for school. It might actually help in getting them ready for school because otherwise they would not have some of the support systems, some of the educational experiences, some of the communal learning experiences that they benefit from in terms of schooling. So when Senator Barack Obama says that some of these children are starting out behind, the evidence is some of them actually are disadvantaged children. But as the studies now say over and over again, when it comes to children who are not from disadvantaged situations, universal preschool may not only not be beneficial, it may be detrimental. In other words, and this is something that just puts this right squarely on our agenda here, it turns out that when you have engaged parents who are able to spend the time with their children are better off with the parents than they are in an institutional setting, a preschool. And anyone who just remembers being a four-year-old, that's probably not many of us, remembers having a four-year-old in the home, that's more of us, you'll just really wonder about the advisability of putting four-year-olds in preschool. But here's where we are as a society. We have begun to institutionalize children at earlier and earlier ages. In terms of both parents working outside the home, daycare, in one form or another, euphemistically named this or categorically named that, it has become the experience of many children. And again, that's an institutional setting. It's outside the context of the home. It's where the child is with other children being cared for by a professional or a paid worker of one form or another. And virtually every daycare will say we're having some educational experiences, and we'll promise that this is likely to put the child ahead. But study after study after study is indicating that daycare has some very significant deleterious effects upon young children. And furthermore, it doesn't take a study, although these are widely available. It just takes a bit of observation and common sense to know that where in a healthy home the parents can give that kind of attention to a child, they're going to come out way ahead. They don't need preschool. And I was born in 1959, I never went to kindergarten. And a lot of the kids I knew didn't go to kindergarten because kindergarten was just not at all a universal experience. So when you were talking about the normal public school education that I received, it was grade 1 through grade 12, 12 years. Now it is virtually universal that in public school systems you have K through 12. So kindergarten has now been added on. So instead of a 12-year program, it's now a 13-year program. But now you're talking about universal preschool. Now, I want to tell you what I believe is going on here. There is an ideological component to this debate because there are people who really believe that that it's good to institutionalize children in these, or let me put it this way, to teach them in these kind of institutional settings at very early ages. They'll benefit from this. And, of course, I would argue that those who have that kind of philosophy have a very different understanding of what children need than what I have. There's an ideological component. There's also a very clear economic component to this, and that is that you're talking here about millions and millions of jobs. You're talking about pumping tens of billions of dollars, says Senator Obama, into universal preschool, and what that means is job after job after job after job. So if you're with the NEA or another teachers union or you are in the business of public school education, you're going to see this as the greatest opportunity for financial and economic and cultural advance that's been given to you since you were given kindergarten. All these jobs, teacher jobs and all the rest. But I want to ask you today as we get ready to go into this break, is this what you want for your child? Do you want universal preschool? Because here's the deal. It does appear to be beneficial to children from many disadvantaged backgrounds. I don't want to ignore that. I don't want to fail to take that into consideration. And if early intervention in some of those situations will be helpful, then we need to take that as a suggestion and as a policy proposal and look at it on its own merits. But here's the deal. When universal preschool, the word universal, remember that, when universal preschool becomes the reality, the expectation is not only that four-year-olds and perhaps even three-year-olds and disadvantaged backgrounds will be expected to be in the institutional settings, but your child as well. Just try telling people that you don't think your child needs kindergarten, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Is that what you're ready for or not? Give me a call. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The whole vision of public school education in America emerged not only out of an educational vision, that is that people in these schools have the opportunity, children and young people in these schools have the opportunity to learn the proverbial reading and writing and arithmetic, but rather also out of an ideological vision and out of a very clear sense of purpose to create citizens out of young people, as theorists such as John Dewey said, to separate them from the prejudices of their parents in order to establish them in this new land in America as new people, stripped of so many of their prejudices of the past, including those imposed upon them by their parents, and in the context of the public schools, shaped to be model citizens. In Dewey's view, extremely secular modern citizens. But now you've had so many revolutions since then. You've had all kinds of learning theories and all kinds of educational philosophies and all kinds of psychotherapeutic things that have gone through the entire system of the public schools. And now you have calls for universal preschool education. It's just mind-boggling to me what this represents. Tens of billions of dollars, says Senator Barack Obama. And this is now a key part of the Democratic Party's platform, and Senator Obama has worked this into many addresses. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't work it in to his address tonight. But I'm suggesting that the main concern about universal preschool should not be whether or not we could afford it. I think that's where much of the national debate might be directed. I think the bigger issue is it's not a good thing in and of itself. It might be helpful to some children, and if so, let's look at that proposal and let's look at helping to meet that need. But when it's referring here to all children in universal preschool, that's an expectation that I see as a job opportunity for by the millions for the teacher unions, and as an ideological opportunity for those who want to separate children from their parents. And I see it as a tremendous danger. I'll just put it that word. I'm going to use the word danger to children to be taken away at these ages from their parents out of the household, where I believe they're more likely to learn in all the right ways. And there's no doubt that a parent can certainly get a child ready for the first grade or kindergarten. That's just beyond question, not to mention those who are schooling their children far beyond that. But this whole idea of universal preschool education is not just about what it might mean for some children who would need it. It's about setting the expectation that this is the norm, either beginning at age 4, already creeping back from 6 to 5 in kindergarten, now from 5 to 4, and there are those who are suggesting that it actually needs to be 3. So you're talking about 3 and 4 and on. Just think of your 3-year-old. Can you even imagine it? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Chillicothe, Ohio. Joe's on the line. What are you thinking, Joe?
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about the universal preschool. I think it's so interesting that any time that you hear universal and trying something, and it sounds like such a great idea, but ideologically, I don't think that that is the case. And from my experience and from looking at research, I'm not sure it is a good idea for all children. And I'm furthermore not sure that proponents of public education, especially early proponents like Horace Mann and Dewey, you mentioned, would agree with such a thing. And it just begs the question, what next? Are we going to go younger?
Yeah, well, the other thing I think I'm compelled to say here is that in some sense, this is a form of tax-subsidized daycare. And that's exactly how it will function in the lives of many people. And many citizens are going to be for this because they won't be paying for the preschool or daycare, regardless of what it's called. Instead, now taxpayers will be paying for it with universal preschool education. And yet they're also going to be claiming that this helps kids get ready. Now, just how ready do you have to be? That's the other question. How ready do you have to be a success in the first grade? We are a strange society to think that that is a huge jump up. Now, are there some things children ought to know? Yes, at age-appropriate levels, preschoolers ought to know exactly some of the things that Senator Obama has indicated here. Numbers, letters, colors. Yes, absolutely. And more than that with a lot of children. But is it in a proper response to that, a logical response to that, to talk about universal health care? Let me read to you from this article I mentioned with the Wall Street Journal. It says this: our understanding of the effects of preschool is still very much in its infancy. But one inescapable conclusion from the existing research is that it's not for everyone. Kids with loving and attentive parents, the vast majority, might well be better off spending more time at home than away in their formative years. The last thing that public policy should do is spend vast new sums of taxpayer dollars to incentivize a premature separation between toddlers and parents. I love that word. That's such an important part. To subsidize and incentivize a premature separation between toddlers and parents. Let me know what you're thinking about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Call with your question or comment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The number to call to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Senator Barack Obama and the Democratic Party are putting themselves four square behind a massive investment in universal preschool education. The question is that a good idea? Not just economically. That's where a lot of the debate is likely to be focused, but just philosophically, pragmatically, is this a good thing? I read to you from some of the research now coming out, a massive study by the Rand Foundation, Rand Corporation, major research institution. Other research also coming in, summarized in the Wall Street Journal last week, suggesting again that it just probably is not wise to think about incentivizing a premature separation between toddlers, talking about 3 and 4 year olds, and parents, 3 and 4 year olds, in institutionalized classroom educational settings. Universal preschool, the issue is not so much preschool, but universal. It would become the expectation. The phone number again to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. Stephen's on the line in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, listening on XM170. Stephen, welcome. What do you think?
Well, I was telling the screener that I'm an educator in Hopkinsville, and while I wouldn't want to descend far down the lifespan to age 3 or 4, one thing that we've noticed trying to teach some students is that a closer connection with their parents is not always a great thing, and perhaps if this could be curricularly driven, it might actually serve as a shot in the arm for our academic society. Because we're not doing too well in the southern states in that regard.
Yeah, and there are some very clear patterns, of course, in urban concentrations and with underprivileged or disadvantaged populations that a lot of these children are not doing well. However, Stephen, what interests me is that a lot of these studies indicate that the very reason they're not doing well, and that's implied even in the Democratic platform, by the way, is that they are lacking what parents can give. In other words, what they'll say is, you know, it's all right for your child because you're able to read to that child and spend time with that child. That child has two parents, or that child's in a home where these things can take place. And if they don't take place, that child needs universal preschool. And I just want to make sure I'm understanding you. You said you wouldn't want to press it back to 3 or 4. When would you want to see children universally expected to be in an institutionalized academic setting?
If my studies of the lifespan are correct, I don't believe there's any real advantageous posture you could have before about age 5. But if it's unilaterally placed, at 3, I don't believe that it would have any benefit academically. But if something that they're intimating could be put across the board, and again, I wouldn't know how to pay for it, I think you might see a real shot in the arm academically, because what we have noticed in many of the homes in our populace is that you have parents that are working so much just trying to make a living in the modern economy that they really don't have time. Some of these expectations are placed off on older siblings who are working, trying to go to school, and just trying to eke by themselves, and they don't have time. And the younger and younger generations are getting left by the wayside. So not 3, I'm maybe 5, and I'm a unashamed Republican, so I just want to see something happen that gives academia a real boost from the ground up. So by the time they enroll in your seminary, of course, they know how to write a coherent sentence.
Well, I'm all for that, Stephen, being able to write a coherent sentence. And I appreciate your call. And as one who's in the trenches, as an educator, you've got a perspective that perhaps others do not have. My concern is just at base level. The concern articulated in this line from the Wall Street Journal article was speaking about the premature separation of toddlers and parents. There are big issues here related to the future and reality of public school education, big theoretical questions about children and educational choice. We talk about those issues on this program. But when it comes to the issue of universal preschool education, the word universal is the scariest word to me because of the expectation this sets up. And I also have to say, as an educator, not as a preschool educator, but as an educator and as a parent, I just have to wonder exactly what we think could happen in institutionalized settings for 3 and 4-year-olds. That's it. Well, let me put it this way. I was talking today with the father of a kindergarten-age student who was saying, you know, boy, that's a big adjustment, you know, going from just being at home to being in a school in a classroom setting at age 5. Well, you move that back, and my goodness. These are kids going from the stroller to the classroom. I think that's really hard to imagine. Appreciate the call, however. And let's go to Amanda calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Amanda.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for taking my call. I've actually been a substitute teacher, and I've worked with students that are in the kindergarten class and within, like, the first few weeks of kindergarten. And I've come to see that taking young children away from their parents, even at 5 years old, a lot of them don't understand basic discipline and even some basic things, that school doesn't replace good parenting.
Yes, it certainly doesn't replace good parenting, and I think that's a very effective word. Amanda, let me just ask you to reflect on your own situation. In what capacity would you describe you calling here? You're calling as a mom?
No, actually, I'm calling as having been in the school system and seeing the effects of what preschool does. It doesn't really do anything to genuinely improve a student between those that have been in preschool and those that haven't.
That's a very, very important comment, and I appreciate you clarifying exactly the experience upon which you were calling. And Amanda, as you speak of your own experience there, I have to say that, again, I've heard from so many parents who said, I don't know exactly what my child is supposed to be learning, but I'm anxious that they're not learning enough. And so you talk with them and you say, how old's the child? He's 3. He's 4. And what kind of learning do you think that the child is not yet receiving? Well, he can't read yet, or he can't do this yet. You know, I think our expectations in terms of formalized education for children at that age are often just wrong. I think some parents have anxiety where they shouldn't have it. And I think some schools help to fuel that anxiety because they're measuring everything in terms of academic performance, sometimes because of the pressure of standardized tests and all the rest, when the fact is that children are natural learners. But this changes a great deal over their lifespan, and certainly even in those years between, say, 5 and 11, perhaps those elementary school years, you're seeing the child move through all kinds of different learning styles and maturity levels during that time. You go backwards and go down from 5, and universal preschool, to me, it's going to be a form of institutionalized daycare, taxpayer-supported daycare. And if it's universal, it means they're expecting your kids to be there too. And I think an awful lot of America's parents, if they wake up to this, are going to say no. They're going to hear the applause lines over universal preschool. But when they hear what it is, I don't think they're going to want it. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. I'm Albert Mueller. We've got time for one final caller. Eileen's calling from Lansing, Michigan, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Eileen.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for taking my call. I am a mother of 2 from an intact home, both parents, with 2 children, one of which went to preschool, one did not. My older child was very receptive to being taught at home. My younger one was not. I think the idea of universal preschool does not take into account children's individual differences. Also, at that age, 2 or 3 and 4, many children are not ready to separate. Many parents are even holding their children out and waiting a year for kindergarten. So to try to make it universal, I think, takes away from our individual rights.
Well, I think that's a very good point. And I think that you, as the mother, of those children, you're in the best position of anyone, along with the husband, of course, the father, the two of you together to make this decision. And if it's nonetheless made as a policy of universal preschool, the word universal means your children are expected to be there too. And I agree with you. It will lead to a curtailment of family rights, a basic transfer of family responsibilities. It will lead to exactly what the Wall Street Journal is warning about here, and that is the premature, subsidized and incentivized, and now perhaps even regulated premature separation of toddlers from their parents. And I just feel like it leads into the entire philosophy of taking the rights and responsibilities away from the family, divesting the family of those functions, and instead reassigning them somewhere else in society. And that's been going on for a long time, and the schools are a big, big part of that. And I'm not saying that it's always because of some kind of sinister vision. Sometimes a lot of these big sociological processes take place simply because of action rather than inaction, pressure on this way, need perceived to be here, taxpayer interest and tax-funded availability. A lot of these things just happen. There are ideologies behind this, but that doesn't mean that everyone who's a proponent of these things is driven by that ideology. Some of them would be driven by very different concerns, but the bottom line is America's parents had better be deeply invested in this issue. And if you heard the applause lines on the floor of the Democratic National Convention, or when Senator Barack Obama gave his acceptance speech, claimed the victory back in June for the primary season, you look at all that and you realize a lot of people think this is a great idea. The first thing they hear when they hear universal preschool is a way to help kids. But just because it sounds good to some ears who think with those terms, that doesn't mean that the effects would be good. I think not hardly. We'll continue the conversation on this program. You can continue it by writing to me. Just go to mail@albertmuller.com or go to the website and send me a message. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation as we head into the Labor Day weekend. I'll meet you then on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.